computers, the three separate lines of sitting places in the suit of the demigods and demons, according to their positions. Now one, taking the container of nectar in her hands, she first approached the demons, satisfied them with sweet words, and thus cheated them of their share of nectar. Then she administered the nectar to the demigods who were sitting at a distant place to make them free from invalidity, old age, and death. Her Mohini Murti, the personality of God, gave the demigods seats at a distance. Then she approached the demons and spoke with them very graciously, so that they thought themselves very fortunate to talk with her. Since Mohini Murti had seated the demigods at a distant place, the demons thought that the demigods would get only a little of the nectar, and that Mohini Murti was so pleased with the demons that she would give the demons all the nectar. The words Vansayan, Upa Sanchari indicate that the Lord's whole policy was to cheat the demons simply by speaking sweet words. The Lord's intention was to distribute the nectar only to the demigods. Text 22, O King, since the demons had promised to accept whatever the woman did, whether just or unjust, now to keep this promise to show their equilibrium and to save themselves from fighting with the woman, they remained silent. Text 23, the demons had developed affection for Mohini Murti and a kind of faith in her, and they were afraid of disturbing the relationship. Therefore, they showed respect and honor to her words and did not say anything that might disturb their friendship with her. Purport, the demons were so captivated by the tricks and friendly words of Mohini Murti that although the demons were served first, the demons were pacified, meaning by sweet words. The Lord said to the demons, the demigods are very miserly and are excessively anxious to take the nectar first. So let them have it first. Since you are not like them, you can wait a little longer. You are all heroes. You're so pleased with me. It is better for you to wait until after the demigods drink. Rahu, the demon who causes eclipses of the sun and moon, covered himself with the dress of a demigod and thus entered the assembly of the demigods and drank nectar without being detected by anyone, even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The moon and the sun, however, because of permanent animosity towards Rahu, understood the situation, and thus Rahu was detected. Purport, the Supreme Personality of God, Mohini Murti, was able to bewilder all the demons, but Rahu was so clever, he was not bewildered. Rahu could understand that Mohini Murti was cheating the demons, and therefore he changed his dress, disguised himself as a demigod, and sat in the assembly of the demigods. Here one may ask why the Supreme Personality of God could not detect Rahu. The reason is that the Lord wanted to show the effects of drinking nectar. This will be revealed in the following verses. The moon and sun, however, were always alert in regard to Rahu. Thus, when Rahu entered the assembly of demigods, the moon and sun immediately detected him, and then the Supreme Personality of God also became aware of him. The Supreme Personality of God had hired using his disc, which was sharp as a razor, once cut off Rahu's head. While Rahu's head was severed from his body, the body, being untouched by the nectar, could not survive. Purport. When the Personality of God of Mohini Murti served Rahu's head, severed Rahu's head from his body, the head remained alive, although the body died. Rahu had been drinking nectar through his mouth, and before the nectar entered his body, his head was cut off. Thus, Rahu's head remained alive, whereas the body died. This wonderful act performed by the Lord was meant to show that nectar is miraculous ambrosia. Rahu's head, however, having been touched by the nectar, became immortal. Thus, Lord Brahma accepted Rahu's head as one of the planets. Since Rahu is the eternal enemy, the moon and sun, he always tries to attack them on the nights of the full moon and the dark moon. Purport, since Rahu had become immortal, Lord Brahma accepted him as one of the grahas of planets, like the moon and sun. Rahu, however, being an eternal enemy, the moon and sun attacks him periodically during the nights of the full moon and the dark moon. The Supreme Personality of God is the best friend and well-wisher of the sweet world. Thus, when the demigods had almost finished drinking the nectar, the Lord, in the presence of all the demons, disclosed his original form. So, here we have the distribution of the nectar by Mohini Avatar. Mohini had taken the nectar from the demons, and of course she didn't give it directly to the devatas, but she said she would distribute it to the two groups, and then, as explained here, with pleasing words, she didn't serve the demons, but she served the devatas the nectar, and then they were able to drink it. And added to this, we have Rahu entering into the group of the devatas and taking a little bit of the nectar so that his head became immortal, but his body wasn't. So this is a description to explain the presence of eclipses. So when an eclipse takes place, we see that the full moon becomes gradually covered with darkness. Or when we have an eclipse of the sun, we see the sun becomes covered with darkness. So the eclipse of the moon takes place on a full moon, and the eclipse of the sun takes place on a amavasya, because it's the moon that's coming in front of it and it's dark. The explanation here is that the Rahu is trying to devour the sun and the moon. He is that darkness here. So he's the enemy of the sun and the moon. So this is an explanation of the phenomena of the eclipse of the sun and the moon. We see that the Rahu and Ketu are considered to be shadow planets in astrology. The other planets are solid, and you can see them moving in the sky. You cannot see Rahu and Ketu moving in the sky with a telescope or whatever. They're actually mathematical points only, theoretical points of intersection of the plane of the moon with the plane of the sun. And then they gradually go around in opposite direction from all the other planets. And when they coincide with the full moon or a dark moon, those points, then we have eclipses. So there's a mathematical, astronomical way of explaining eclipses. And then there is this personality form of explaining eclipses, the personality of Rahu, who sometimes tries to devour the sun or the moon, and then we get an eclipse. So in other words, the mathematical, astronomical explanation is represented here by the story of how Rahu became the enemy and tries to devour the sun and moon periodically. So this way we can take it as somewhat a symbolic story of a phenomenon in the material world, which is explained by astronomy and astrology and mathematics in a little bit different way. In any case, it is there to somehow account for the process of eclipse. Eclipses do not occur all the time. They are an irregular phenomenon. So we do, of course, have the wave phases of the moon. The moon increases and increases until it becomes a full moon, then it decreases and decreases and becomes a dark moon. And of course the sun rises and sets every day. So when there is a phenomenon where the moon suddenly disappears on a full moon and it gets covered up, that is rather extraordinary. Or when the sun during the daytime gets covered up again and it becomes dark out, that's also extraordinary. So the processes of eclipses, which happen periodically, every few years we get one, has to be explained somehow or other. So we have here one explanation, according to Rahu, the demon, who's trying to swallow the sun and the moon. And the other explanation is according to the astronomy, which is obviously a little more rational for the modern person. So in any case, we have to get some explanation for why we have eclipses. So we have these two explanations here, which are not necessarily contradictory. They're just different ways of representing the same phenomenon through a personality called Rahu and through astronomical arrangements of what, sun and moon and certain shadows, intersection of planets, etc. So in this way we have the explanation of the eclipse. So Rahu was able to survive here with his by drinking the nectar. There's an opposite point called Ketu, which is exactly opposite. So wherever Rahu is in astrology, 180 degrees opposite is Ketu, but now it's opposite. So Rahu is called the head, and Ketu is called the tail, so to speak, of the demon. And the Aries are that distance apart. So we have them together more or less, even though Rahu's head is cut off. They are called Chaya Graha, because they don't actually have a visible presence. We don't see them in the sky. So they are points only of mathematical points for calculation. But they have inauspicious significance. Just as some planets are inauspicious, like Saturn and Mars, so Rahu and Ketu are considered to be inauspicious. Of course, Sun and Moon are actually part of the Svarga sphere, so they're Devatas. But they do, Sun and Moon are not, they are Devatas. And then we have Saturn and Mars are also Devatas, so they're not, in that sense, demons. But they do have some bad effects on human beings. But Rahu and Ketu are considered to be demons, so they're not in the Svarga sphere at all. They're below. Rahu is considered to be situated below the Svarga sphere in the Bhuvarloka sphere, just at the top of the Bhuvarloka sphere. And they are considered to be demonic in nature. So in spite of the fact that some of the planets are considered to have bad effects, like Mars and Saturn, they're all in the, still in the Devata sphere and carry out their work according to the Supreme Lord. The demons, by their will, refuse to follow the order of the Lord. And that's why they're called demons. But somehow or other, we get Rahu considered to be a planet like the Svarga sphere. Why? Will of the Lord. Because he took the nectar. So therefore, we'll put him in his other class with the Devatas, simply for that reason, even though he was demonic in nature. So therefore, when they do astrology, Rahu and Ketu were also considered as among the planets, as the other seven planets, even though they are from a different background, that is, demon background. In this way, we have an explanation of the presence of Rahu and Ketu in the sky and in astrology and in astronomy through this particular story. Story in the Bhagavatam is there to illustrate the variety of the Lord's forms. So this particular form is Mohini Murti. And of course this verse is Jagatpati. He is the master of the universe. But the form he has is that Mohini, a woman. So he's actually a male form in terms of being the Supreme Lord, but in terms of avatar form, he is a woman form. So this is quite a unique aspect of the Supreme Lord. The other forms are all male forms: Nishirmadeva, Vamana, Varaha, Kurma, Matsya, etc., Narnarayan, Rishis, all male forms. So this is the only female form. But some people will ask, why doesn't the Lord appear as a woman? So he does. He has a female form also. So he can appear anyone he wants, male or female. So this illustrates the extraordinary nature of the Supreme Lord. He has inconceivable powers. So he can have all sorts of forms, including a woman's form. And one form can become many forms. So Krishna is one form, but the one form also has many forms, which are not different forms of the same form. So he illustrated that in Dwarka, when Narada Muni came in. Narada Muni wanted to see the extraordinary powers of the Lord. So he came and he went to Rukmini's palace, and there he saw Krishna and Rukmini. They were sitting together, joking. And then quickly he went to Satyabhama's palace, and he saw Satyabhama and Krishna also there, and they're doing something else. And then Krishna said, "Oh, you've come. Where did you come from? Why did you come?" And he asked the same questions that Krishna asked in Rukmini's palace, as if he were fully ignorant. And then Narada, when he went to another palace, and there's another queen, and then again, Krishna asked the same questions. "Oh, very nice you've come," and he worshipped him and everything. "Why have you come?" So over and over he went, in a few seconds he went to one palace, another palace, another palace. And Krishna was doing different things in different palaces, and he surprised, and he welcomed Narada when he reached palace. Now, if, of course, we see Krishna expands into different forms. But then the Bhagavad says, no, it wasn't expansion. It's one form, one bahu, one body, but it's in different places simultaneously. Not like a yogi who expands his body into nine forms. Or even Krishna who is Chaturvyuha, expanding himself into four forms. No, it was one Krishna, but he was in all the palaces simultaneously. So that is more extraordinary. It wasn't expansion forms. One wasn't less than the other. It was all the same Krishna. But somehow he was everywhere, doing different things. In fact, he did not on different things, different times of the day. Narada Muni went a few seconds, but sometimes Krishna was waking up, sometimes he was taking a bath, sometimes he was doing Gayatri Mantra, sometimes going to the assembly, sometimes it was noontime, sometimes it was afternoon, sometimes evening time, and all these different palaces sometimes, and even different seasons. And sometimes he's celebrating Diwali, another one he's doing a different festival, etc. All simultaneously. And so Narada Muni became completely confused. How is this possible? So it's the extraordinary power of Krishna. Supreme Lord can manifest one form in different times, in different places, etc., simultaneously by his power. So that is one power. The other power is he can manifest completely different forms, as we see in the avatar forms. And still, they are one person. So different forms, same form, can manifest in different times, in different places, etc., simultaneously. It is not a problem for the Supreme Lord. So in this way, the Supreme Lord can manifest him infinitely in the infinite universes, simultaneously, and still be one person. So that's the extraordinary nature of the Lord. The most extraordinary feature is that the one person is ultimately Krishna. It's not Vishnu. That Krishna has forms of Vishnu who enter into all the universes and lotus comes in the navel, Brahma appears and creates universes, etc. And then the Lord appears as avatars in the universes. And all these forms of Vishnu that appear in all the universes are non-different from Krishna, but different form of Vishnu. And of course, Vishnu exists in the spiritual world, all these avatar forms exist in the spiritual world, and also Krishna exists in the spiritual world, simultaneously. So all those forms, Krishna is considered to be the final form. In this, they're all eternal, so we can't say he was first, but in the sense that he is the full manifestation of all powers, and therefore all the other forms are said to manifest as aspects of Krishna, including the Vishnu forms, Rama, Narsimha, etc. Manifestations of Krishna in different aspects. Why? Because he manifests whatever they manifest, but he manifests more than they manifest. And therefore, he's put in that particular position as Swayam Bhagavan. So that is the glory of the Supreme Lord, how he can manifest himself in different ways. Throughout the Bhagavatam, we'll find descriptions of different forms of the Lord. They are all the Supreme Lord. The intention is ultimately to show that these are simply aspects of Krishna. So we have 10 topics of Bhagavad Gita. And so we have within those 10 topics how the Lord protects the devotees in the material world, so he comes as avatar, etc. But the ultimate topic of the Bhagavad Gita is Asraya. That's the 10th topic. He who is the cause and source of everything else. So that is Krishna. So therefore, all of the other forms that are described here in the previous cantos, there were descriptions of Viraha and Srimade. And we have Kurma in this chapter, particular chapter. We have Mohini, we have Dandantari, we have Nar Narayan, we have Prithu, and Matsya, etc. All these Varaha, Vamana, all these forms are ultimately aspects of Krishna. So whatever these forms manifest, Krishna can also do the same thing, plus he does more. Okay. So, when we look at these different pastimes or the different avatars, we look at them in relation to Krishna. When other people see the avatars, okay, there's 10 avatars, Krishna is one of them, kind of thing, they look at that. When we see the avatars, they are all manifestations of certain of Krishna's qualities. That's what they're doing. A man who has an activity like Krishna. So in fact, it is stated that everything, all the pastimes, all the avatars are in Krishna. So when Krishna is in Vrindavan, sometimes he plays with the cowherd boys and they make a bridge across the river, like Lanka Bridge. They play with the Leela of Ramchandra. Or they enact the different activities of the different avatars. Because they're all within Krishna anyway. So whatever powers are in the Srimade or Rama or Varaha, etc. And they're all in Krishna also. So in other words, we can take all the different avatar activities and the remarkable things that do simply some aspect of Krishna. That's all. And when Krishna manifests his powers, he has the same powers as he has. He manifests them in a completely remarkable way, more than anyone else. So, for instance, the Supreme Lord is most merciful in any form. And here he's giving mercy to the devatas. And in the form of Vra, he gives mercy to the devatas by lifting the ocean, the Bhumandala out of the ocean. Whereas Vamana, he defeats Bali because he's conquered over the heavenly planets and he's merciful to the devatas, etc. So the Lord showed mercy in different ways, by conquering over the demons or killing the demons, etc. When Krishna comes, he's more merciful. How is that? What happens when he kills demons? He liberates the demons. And sometimes the demons end up in the spiritual world even, which is generally reserved only for devotees. So, in other words, when Krishna shows mercy, he shows it in a more remarkable way than any other forms, including that of Ramchandra. His mercy is extraordinary. So one of the qualities of the Lord, that when he kills demons, they get subha. Good goal. They get another birth without any hellish punishment. That's the general description of the Supreme Lord. But when Krishna kills them, they get more than that. They get moksha, or they get sarupya, or salokya in the spiritual world. Most remarkable. So in this way, Krishna, these qualities that distinguish Vishnu from Shiva and Jivas become more remarkable in Krishna. So one of the remarkable features of the Vishnu distinguishing from Shiva or the Jivas is that he is the seed of all the avatars, and he is the source of all the universes. So Mahavishnu is there, and all the universes come out, and through Vishnu, the different avatars appear in the material world. So what does Krishna do? He shows that he is the source of all the Vishnu forms. He shows up to Brahma. He is the source of all the avatars. He is the source of all the universes and all the Vishnu forms and all the avatars. So that is what Krishna shows to Brahma. So this is most important. No other form of the Lord shows that. So in this way, Krishna has very remarkable powers that and manifests powers that and qualities that no other form manifests. He's put in this special category. So here we have manifestation of Mohini avatar. And her particular power is that she bewilders the demons. Usually, the demons hate the Lord. So when Hiranyaksha says, Varaha, then says, the former Vishnu, I hate it. Or when Hiranyakasipu sees the Shrimp, then says, Vishnu, former Vishnu, I hate him. What to do? How to attract the demons? So this is what Mohini does. She becomes a woman. He becomes a woman and attracts all the demons, and they fall in love with her, and they're completely bewildered. So they can't fight because they're so attracted to her. So it's so bewildering that in this form they don't even know it's Vishnu. They say, "Oh, they don't know it's Vishnu at all." Usually, the demons, when they see the Lord, they say, "Ah, it's Vishnu, another form of Vishnu." Hiranyakasipu, when he sees the shrimp, it's another form of Vishnu. He's tricking us. He's got this form of actual Vishnu. But when they see Mohini, they don't know it's Vishnu at all. Totally bewildered by her beauty. So this is a remarkable nature of Mohini. Completely bewilders the demons so that they don't even know it's Vishnu or anything, and they become completely favorable towards her, in spite of the fact that they're demons. So he does this through the woman form. That's the nature of this particular form. Form of a woman to bewilder the demons, make them favorable, take the nectar, give it to the devatas, etc. So this is another feature of the cleverness of the Supreme Lord. Without fighting, without doing anything, he's able to take the nectar and give it to the devatas so that they can prevail over the demons. So in this way, he shows his remarkable nature, his cleverness, whatever, to assume forms, most surprising forms, that no one would ever expect. And in these forms, completely fool the demons. So that is the nature of this pastime. It's Rahu. Rahu's a demon. the normal sky is we have sunrise, sunset, moon going through its different phases. If there's a regularity in that, the sun doesn't rise, that's obviously inauspicious. Or when the sun is risen, suddenly it becomes black again. That's not regular. So any irregularity is considered to be inauspicious in most cases. Which is normal. It's like the weather goes on regularly. If there's some big disturbance, the weather is considered inauspicious again. And we see the symptoms of Kali Yuga when Arjuna comes back to the Pandavas and he reports that Krishna has disappeared, and then Yudhisthira sees some strange symptoms. These are irregular symptoms that don't happen all the time. The way the animals behave are different. They ring around the sun. A strange ring around the sun. Yeah, effulgence around the sun, etc. All these different things, how the earth reacts, and irregular. So therefore they consider to be inauspicious. It means something sinful or something disaster is about to happen. Temporarily gets his little chance, and then again he disappears. Happens and not happens. Like that. Makes an attempt. But then he can't succeed because again the sun comes back, again the moon comes back. Well, we can say in one sense this is Devata's involved also because Devata's are in charge of weather, everything. So it's a combination of demons, Devata's, karma, etc. When we find great irregularity, it's not due to karma or anything, then obviously it must be demons. So when Hiranyaksha made the Bhumandala sink into the water, that is obviously demonic activity, it's not karma. So then the Lord has to come to correct that. In Rasluta, he expanded himself into 3 million forms, 3 billion forms. So same. He's one. Yeah, he's not a secondary future. He's actually everywhere. He's one Krishna everywhere. That's his extraordinary feature. Yeah, but then he appeared between each gopi, and they made a big circle. So it's Krishna, gopi, Krishna, gopi, Krishna, gopi, Krishna, gopi, and Krishna in the center also. So he was with each gopi. But when they looked, they didn't see the other gopis, they only saw Krishna with them. Even though it was a gopi and a Krishna, a gopi and a Krishna, they saw one Krishna with them. But he was actually between each gopi, and they were in a circle. That's his extraordinary nature. We can call it an expansion, but usually an expansion means we have one Krishna and then he expands his forms everywhere, like this, and then the expansions are a little bit less or something. In this sense, he's the original Krishna, so we don't call it an expansion. They can if they want. If they're doing material work. If they're doing spiritual work, it doesn't matter. Yeah. I think they just, in the Gaudiya Mats, they do it also, but that's only out of just what public opinion, more or less, because we don't interrupt the worship really. In other words, we don't stop the worship when the eclipse is on, we don't stop the offerings, etc. It goes on. But we see Krishna when he went to Dwarka, out and went to Kurukshetra, they observe the eclipse also, bathing in the river, etc. So they act normally in one sense during the eclipses also. Everything becomes polluted, technically, yeah. The water, etc., the food, everything contaminated. Well, all demons are ignorant in one sense. The demons are in tamas and rajas. Rahu is one of them, but not the only one. Everybody else also is the same. He's the distributor of karma. He's in the Svarga sphere, but he does unpleasant things for people, I guess. Gives you your sinful reaction, so to speak. Whereas Jupiter and others give you your punya reactions here. Jupiter, Guru, Sukra, Buddha, good things, and in general. And Shani and Mongol give you the bad things. But they also give you good things as well. It's a mixture usually, but generally they give some
bad things also. So we could say the bad karma is more prominent in them than the good karma with the other planets. Well, Guru is the priest of the Devatas, but we find another planet, Sukra, is the priest of the demons, but it's a good planet. So there's actually a controversy there because Guru is for Dharma and Sukra is for Boga. But most people think Boga to be nice, so therefore it's put in the good category, but actually it's bad in one sense because it's material enjoyment. Whereas Guru is in charge of Dharma, which is much better, actually. But both are put in the same category, but because it's enemies as planets. They don't get along together. Because Guru restricts the enjoyment to some degree. Yes, to pacify all the bad effects of their karmas on the different planets. Yeah, are those representing the Navagrahas? They are. Oh, I see. I think that's an add-on for the different thing. They put that in there later. But anyway, the Lord is in charge of all the effects of all the devatas and everything, so it doesn't matter. Yes, it's true in that sense. Gunas. But generally they're not attracted to the Lord, they're attracted to devatas, if anything. And so the devatas, like Shiva, is in charge of Tamoguna. So therefore the people in ignorance should worship Shiva. Like that, so. According to gunas, they generally worship devatas. If they come to sattva-gun, then they should worship Vishnu or the avatar forms.
When they worship Vishnu, they are
attacking
different
forms. So, that is individual preference only, I think. We can't say that's due to gunas, because the Supreme Lord of Vishnu is beyond the gunas completely.